Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Brian Tetta, executive producer of The View. It's Monday, but that's okay, because I'm here with Alyssa Farah Griffin. This is Behind the Table. All right, happy Monday, Alyssa. How you doing?
Happy Monday, Brian. I'm doing great.
All right, good. Well, it's a big week in politics, obviously. Super Tuesday is tomorrow. Let's start off hot. What are your predictions?
I wish I had more exciting predictions. Listen, I think Donald Trump's going to sweep. And here's why. So the RNC under Trump changed some of the rules for these early primary states to make them winner-take-all states. So meaning, say, Nikki Haley gets 40% of delegates or 40% of the vote in some of these states. If Donald Trump's at that 60% threshold, he gets all of them, whereas other states, they split him. So I think it's very likely he locks up the nomination officially. But what I'm keeping my eyes on is this. There's some very interesting reporting from the AP today that's looking at Iowa, where about 2 in 10 Republican primary voters there said they supported Nikki Haley and they wouldn't support Donald Trump in the general election. In New Hampshire, that number went up to a third of voters, and in South Carolina, about a quarter. I didn't get to get to this on air today, but Donald Trump has a massive general election problem. And I personally find it hard to believe that there are more people with him post-2020 than there were in 2020. So after the insurrection, after January 6th and all the chaos and the indictments. So that's you know, a little beam of hope for those of us who don't want to see him win. I hope that Nikki Haley sticks in this. I think that what she's saying is important. I think that it will motivate independents, moderates to do something, whether it is, you know, basically to not just sit on the couch. So turn out and write someone in. Are they going to vote for her? Is there a third party option? Do they go to Biden? But I think it's important that those people's voices are heard.
Right. So there's different versions of results here. So I agree with you. It seems very likely that Donald Trump's going to sweep everything. But there's also what the numbers, the way he wins, the way she performs, tell us about what's to come. And then the other side of this, and we didn't have time to talk about this either on the show today because of the late-breaking SCOTUS news, but there was a bad weekend for Joe Biden poll-wise. There were some pretty traumatic polls for Democrats. Now, and of course, the immediate reaction is don't trust polls. This is something Whoopi talks about all the time. And I like to, you know, in the meeting in the morning, I'll kind of try to argue with Whoopi about that and say, well, Whoop, I mean, you know, I know it's only a handful of people, but this is how sampling works, and it always has. And then she rightfully points out, well, look at the midterms, look at the last election, look at the one before that. And she's not wrong. So what do you take away from these Biden polls that are kind of very scary?
So listen, I do think there's good reason to not trust polls, but I don't think you can write them off on aggregate when so many after another are showing you a similar trend. And this is what, you know, keeps me up at night is this election will be a nail biter. Like, I do believe that Donald Trump is the least popular he's ever been. I believe he's going to lose the popular vote by a historic margin. But we know that our elections come down to the Electoral College. It comes down to about 7 swing states and about 500,000 voters in those. And a lot of those people, they're like, you know, our family, friends of ours, they're going to make their decision a couple weeks out based on how they feel about the state of the economy or the direction the country's going. And I sometimes think that the national narratives around what's going to motivate people to vote is very out of step with the average voter. And the Biden numbers, I mean, there are major red flags there. I think the State of the Union is a big opportunity to do a couple of things for him. He needs a forward-looking message. It can't just be, here's why you need to be scared of Trump. He needs to address the very real issues that voters have continually told him they care about. So the border. He needs to articulate how he compromised a lot to get this border deal and Republicans blocked it. He needs to talk about what's the plan for the economy if, despite what he points to as successes, it still doesn't feel good for an American. And then draw the contrast. And he also, frankly, needs to give what will likely be a 60-minute speech and seem vital and full of energy and somebody who's ready to serve for another 4 years.
And not stumble over words.
And that's the thing. Yeah. He's going to be under a microscope. I personally am of the mind. I agree with John Stewart on this. I actually think because he's the oldest president, these are the two oldest candidates in history, they do deserve to be under scrutiny. Our country's too important. But it's a big task for him. I think that, you know, that could – listen, State of the Unions don't historically majorly sway things, but at this juncture.
I was going to ask, in 2024 especially, how important is a State of the Union speech, do you think? Is it going to change hearts and minds for anybody? Or are there really undecideds out there that are going to be swayed?
Usually I would say it doesn't matter, but if Joe Biden comes off seeming vital with it and gets through it without any major gaffes, I think that could help some of these fence sitters who are like, I genuinely don't like Trump the person, but I liked how my 401k looked under Donald Trump, or right. I felt better about the direction of the country.
It's funny. I have friends that are Trump supporters. I have a lot of friends that are Biden supporters. With a few exceptions, most of them feel absolutely certain that their guy's going to win. It's unbelievable. They're like, oh, there's no way Biden's going to win. There's no way they're going to reelect Trump again. It's
crazy. But the one thing that – and I think we try to do a good job of this – no one would be accurate to say, like, this person's got it in the bag. This mm-hmm. is going to be a nail biter. We're a country where we are divided, and there's an interesting dynamic here where I think Trump is the Republican who's most likely to lose to Biden of the candidates, but Biden is also likely the Democrat most likely to lose to Trump. So it's honestly going to come right up until the final stretch, and no one should dismiss, you know, where it could end up, and also a ton can happen in 8 months.
Absolutely.
Good and bad.
All right. Another political story that we talked about last week was Mitch McConnell leaving as GOP Senate leader. You warned that people should be careful, kind of a devil you know
totally.
setup.
Yeah.
What's your prediction for how things will fall out there?
You're going to get a more Trumpian leader, just hands down. There have already been, you know, senators saying Donald Trump shouldn't put his finger on this race. Well, he's absolutely going to. He handpicked the Speaker of the House.
Mm-hmm. And that's worked out so well.
And because of it, Ukraine aid is on the line and being held up. A border security package that's objectively conservative is being held up. So he will – Mitch McConnell, with him, Democrats knew what they were getting. They knew his policy viewpoints. They know that he was against abortion. So you're not surprised when he does things like – confirm justices or judicial appointees right. who side with those viewpoints. But he also is somebody who actively worked with the White House when necessary. He never wanted government shutdowns. He was always the one, you know, between the House Republicans who would say a shutdown's never a good idea. And he'd compromise with Democrats on major policy funding, you know, defense spending and whatnot. I think I like John Thune, who's in contention, but I think whoever it is only going to get the leader if they have the blessing of Donald Trump. And I think that Democrats are going to suddenly find that Mitch McConnell didn't feel so bad after all.
Yeah, I think you might be right. All right, we have a listener text for you. Alyssa, you are my favorite Republican panelist in a while. What's your fan?
Oh, my one fan.
We were joking today because there was on the way out of the show today, someone yelled, I love you, Alyssa, and you were very
funny.
No, I was
like, that's my one fan.
You have many. I knew you were right for the job from the first time you guest hosted. Would you speak to being what is often the only Republican on the panel? Do you feel pressure being the person at the table representing an entire party?
Such a good question. There certainly is pressure there, but I try to be authentic to where I see the vast majority of Republicans in the country. So you'll hear me use some of the same statistics over and over again, because I feel like oftentimes mainstream voting Republicans are actually quite different than where elected politician Republicans in Washington tend to be. Mm-hmm. One that I like to use, 86% of them support background checks for firearms. That would not be what you would think if you just looked at elected Republicans or loud voices in right-wing media. I talk about it with like the idea of some access to abortion care, but also some limitations because there are major conscience objections. So I think when you listen, it'd be hard to do this job if you were doing it to get like happy clicks in right wing media and be like a star of sort of the, you know, the right wing of Republican politics. But the vast majority of this country falls a little more right of center, if not left of center. And I try to speak to those voices.
Yeah. I mean, I've been here long enough to know that no conservative voice on this show is ever going to get praise from conservative media.
Correct.
And until they leave and then it becomes then they're beloved.
Exactly. And if you're angling for that, you're also just it's not going to work at the table, because part of the job is not just talking, it's also listening. And it shows if you're showing up like, I'm here to own the libs, not to have a conversation. That's not how this table works.
It doesn't work long term. And really, not just to the conservative seat, but to every seat at the table, the people that are successful at this job, which I think everyone who's there right now is, are the people who are authentic to who they are.
100%.
And that's why, I mean, you often, people who don't watch the show think you guys agree on everything and there's only one view. People who watch the show know that, A, you can't really always tell where someone's going to be on a topic, and B, you don't agree on really much of anything,
right,
not in a real
right.
way. With the exception of no one's a big fan of Donald Trump. Other than that, no, I can't find much.
But that's true. But I also think it's, you know, we've talked about how, like, this table, it's sort of like having a, you know, dinner and drinks with girlfriends where, you know, I've talked all the time. Alex, my best friend, is a Democrat. So we've navigated political conversations our whole friendship. And part of that, being able to talk to someone who at times has diametrically different viewpoints, is doing it in a nuanced and earnest way where you're not trying to smack them over the head or be judgmental of their viewpoints, in receiving their disagreement in a respectful way. And, like, I think that's a lot closer to actual life than what we often see portrayed in some of the partisan media.
I agree. All right. Now, some personal news incoming. This is very exciting. You bought a house in the suburbs.
I did.
This is very exciting.
Justin and Herbie are becoming suburbanites. I'm so excited, and I never thought that I would be.
Right.
I've lived in a major city basically since right out of college, and always loved it. I'd always had, you know, been walking distance, everything, you know, whatever, had city life between D.C. and New York. But I'm really excited. We're going to be in Westchester County, still, you know, commutable to all my commitments in the city. But honestly, it came down to wanting space and the yard that my dog deserves.
So, that's a big deal. I moved to the suburbs for my dog too, actually,
Right? Initially. And to be honest, I'm really excited about it. And it is a walkable community. But how was the adjustment for you when you...
So I moved not too far away from where I grew up. So it was very familiar. When I was living in the city when I got married, my wife liked going to visit my family in the suburbs. And we liked the restaurants and the life out there. It's definitely, it's nice to be able to turn the page on work. You know, I used to live at my old job. I lived a block away from my office. And that was something you never really felt like you were leaving that world. This is like, I have a secret identity on the weekends where I'm, you know, basic suburban dad. And then I'm executive producer of The View during the week.
Okay.
And I kind of like that.
That's exactly what I want. You said that perfectly, because being in the city, and I love it, greatest city on earth, but you never feel like you totally turn off being in the city and being near work and being in the thick of it. And that's what I want. I want a little bit of a disconnect, whether it's at the end of the night or on weekends, to just be like home and, you know, with my husband, with my dog, and just feel like also just a little bit of quiet.
It's, I remember when I first moved, the big thing was I spent an inordinate amount of time at Home Depot. I was there constantly. The other thing you'll learn is that anything that goes wrong in your house, no matter how big or how small, costs about $3,000
to fix. At minimum,
That's about it. And other than that, I don't know. I really love it for the most part, to be honest with you. The only time I miss it is if I'm in the city late, if I'm going to a show or I'm going to a party, and, you know, like, then at the end of that night, I think, like, oh, why did I move out of the city? I could just crawl into a bed right now if I still lived here. And instead, I've got like a 45-minute commute home.
But, exactly. But no, and I was telling my husband, because he's actually was more reluctant than I was, surprisingly. And I said, I was like, because he also works mostly from home, whereas I'll be in the city every day because the show's here. I'm like, if you miss the city any day of the week, I can just stay in the city. You meet me here and we go to dinner. Or we go to a show. So we still have all the access to the great things.
It's the best of both worlds.
It is the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited for you. It's a whole new chapter.
So the thing is going to be, I need to learn how to drive. I actually don't have my driver's license. It expired.
Okay.
And I haven't driven in years.
We have to do this on the show.
We probably need to do it on the show.
Yeah, I think so. So how long has it been since you've driven a car?
Like 10 years. You don't need to drive in Washington, D.C.
Right. All right. So we need like the cast of the Fast and the Furious that gets you out of parallel park or something.
Exactly.
We'll figure out something fun to do with this. Or a NASCAR driver.
Yeah, like Barbara learning how to drive.
Yes, exactly. I think that's terrific. It's an adjustment, no doubt. Although you can still Uber a little bit in the suburbs.
It's
not the end of the
world.
But you have to learn. All right. That's fun. We'll be back in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, You want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon slash spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one Group Text you won't want to exit.
Also, speaking of basic suburban life, you and Sarah went out to dinner with your husbands last week. Sarah said you all had a great time. Tell us about it.
We had so much fun. So we'd been trying to get this on the books for basically since I started on the show. And we, you know, we've been to events together. Like we did the White House Christmas party together. We'd done a wedding. So we knew that our husbands liked each other and had hit it off.
Yeah.
But like they're just two peas in a pod. The funniest thing, because Sarah and I could talk for hours about anything because there's so much and we just have so many things we bond over. But seeing them really connect was fun. And it's also funny because Sarah and Justin are very similar. They're definitely the extroverts in the relationship. They could talk to a wall. They get really excited about things. Max and I are actually much more similar. When I'm not on air, I actually lean more introverted than extroverted. So it's like a fun dynamic where like I'm way more like him and she's like my husband and yet we all get along so well.
This is great. It's very hard to find couples where you like both people.
Well, and that was the other thing. We both left and we're like – because, yeah, a lot of times it's like, oh, we have to get together with, you know, a colleague, but – you know, you're there to be the spouse, but both of us genuinely enjoy both of their company so much. And Sarah's been like the biggest support system to me on this show and just like in life too, because she's just like a, you know, a life step or two ahead of me. So about navigating that. So I just love spending time with her.
Yeah. I find that like I'm lucky enough to have a bunch of friends where both my wife and I both like the husband and the wife, but they're rare. And when I have them, I definitely like keep them in my circle forever because there's so many friends that I've met and I'm like, I love this guy. I love this girl. And then their spouses are just dead weight. And you don't want that.
Yep. Yeah. No dead weight in the Haynes Schifrin household.
All right. Definitely not. I've had dinner with Max
although
and
I did show up because I thought we were ahead of them, but they were seated and I was like, there's a reservation under Max Haynes. And then I immediately got myself. I was like, wait, sorry.
Hello, Mr. Haynes. Yeah. Yes. No, I enjoyed that
like
too.
That happens to view spouses a lot, probably.
I think so. I'm sure Mr. Behar gets that occasionally also. All right. Well, that's fun. Now, speaking of your favorite topics, let's catch up on Bravo because, first of all, it's been a year since Scandalvol began, amazing, if you can believe that. And former Vanderpump Rules star Raquel Levis, am I saying it right?
Yes, but now she goes by Rachel.
Oh, I'm sorry. Rachel Levis is suing Tom Sandoval. I remember that whole thing. And Ariana Madix for eavesdropping, invasion of privacy, and revenge porn. It made a lot of news last week when she filed the lawsuit. We haven't talked about it on the show yet, but I bet we will. What do you make of this?
Okay, so I was very hard on Raquel, now Rachel, for her actions and her betrayal of Ariana. I think it's one of the most hurtful things you could do to a friend. But I do now, with the benefit of knowing more of the story and a year later, Tom Sandoval is by far the villain in this. Like, what we know in 2024, post Me Too, he actually allegedly recorded an intimate video of her, saved it without her consent, and then, you know, acknowledged that it existed at minimum to other people. That is such a violation of trust. I would argue there's probably legal implications there. And I feel like she's finally in a place after getting some mental health treatment where she's realizing what an unhealthy relationship they had. This is a man who's older than her. The power dynamics were off. And I would call this exploitive. So I'm proud of her for taking this step. I didn't totally get how Ariana fits into it. Based on what I read, there wasn't anything about her sharing it. She did see it, but she stumbled on it on her partner's phone. So I don't know what she would have done wrong in this, but I think, to be honest, Tom Sandoval has a lot to answer for this, and I'm not sure that Lisa Vanderpump and co. should be trying to cover for him much more, because aside from just his egregious behavior, like, you don't do that. And honestly, I would love to have Rachel on the show, and I think she would get a more welcome reception than she thinks. It was a horrible thing to do, but it's not – that doesn't need to define the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And the way – and it's showing that there wasn't just one victim in this, if this is in fact the case.
Well, we'll invite her for sure. Has she – does she feel – has she apologized for the affair or not really?
So the challenge is this. So I've listened to one or two episodes of her podcast, and she does acknowledge wrongdoing. This may be a stylistic thing. She'll then recall, like, the affair starting and, like, her best friend being asleep in the house while she's sleeping with her partner in the car outside.
Right.
And she's giggling and she's smiling. And it's still a little hard for me to get over that, because Ariana's killing it. She's on Broadway. They just extended the show. She's got all these endorsements. But the fact is this, she could be worth $20 million tomorrow. It would not wipe away the pain, the years of distrust and, like, growth you'll have to go through from being betrayed in this way. Nothing, like, I was cheated on with, like, a stranger, and that took years for me to, like, have trust in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
A friend and a partner lying to you like this, she's not out of the woods. Like, I think she needs to show more empathy and how she talks about it.
Okay, now I have to ask, how did you find out?
Oh my gosh. Wait, you haven't ever told this story?
I don't know. Have you?
No, so I had this horrible ex. We were in a rocky place in the relationship, but he was dealing with a loss in the family. So I toughed it out knowing there were red flags, because I was like, I can't leave him in this moment.
You're a good person.
And the night they passed, I happened to be comforting him, and I saw his Tinder messenger go up, and we'd been in a relationship for over 2 years.
Oh my gosh.
Of a girl he'd been messaging with, and it turned out it was rampant. He would travel for work, and there were many women. So I did what I could that night. I did not address it. I was there to comfort him.
In the moment, you continued to comfort him after knowing he had done
that? I walked
to
the bathroom, sobbed, pulled myself together, comforted him through the night, and then addressed it after the funeral.
So you had to go through that entire time helping him, knowing that he had betrayed you.
And in retrospect, I don't know if that was the right thing, but I was like, he's
a compassionate thing. My gosh.
His loss was far worse than mine. And I also think that I did know that he wasn't the right person for me. So even though it was, like, a, you know, totally hurt, I was weirdly at peace about it. The hard part was just then, like, going through funeral and family and all that.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
No, you definitely have not told this before.
Okay.
All right. Wow. Oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you.
It
all worked out.
It all worked out. That's
exactly
what it comes down to.
This guy might not have gotten along with Max Shiffer
exactly.
in the same way. So, you know,
he would not have done well at dinner.
No, exactly. All right. And now the podcast has more material. So.
Yes.
Thanks, Unnamed.
And my husband is, like, the best guy in the world. So I won.
I'm a fan of Justin too. All right. So last week you got slimed in a game of Double Dare with Mark Summers. There were a lot of funny commentary on it. You had a funny post on your Instagram saying that you used to work at the Pentagon and now you're getting slimed on national television. How was that for you?
Okay, so I was, like, cranky that morning. It was a pre-tape. I'd had a late night before, but as soon as I got on set, I'm like, I get to be in Double Dare. That's every 90s kid's dream. And then getting to be slimed, it was hilarious. Joy got right into it. She like, and she asked me, by the way, she wouldn't mind me saying this beforehand. She's like, can I make a joke about Trump? I was like, yes, please do. That makes it more fun.
Yes.
That was like, I love that. Anytime we do a game and a competition, I enjoy it. But it was also funny because Sarah wanted to be slimed so badly. She was trying to throw the game. And Sunny was getting mad because she's so competitive.
Yes.
So then there's a picture. You'll see I'm get slimed and Sarah's like beaming and then comes sprinting over because she wants to get slimed.
She wants to get some slime on her too. Yeah.
But it is funny because most of my friends in D.C., they're, you know, they work for defense contractors. They work in government. They work at, you know, consulting firms and these like serious jobs because that's the world we grew up in. And then I'm like, oh, this is what I did today.
Yeah. I've said this before. And it kind of goes back to that text message where they knew you'd be right for the job from the first time you guest hosted. Now, I did the initial interview with you and brought you on the show. And I was never worried about you on the politics. But in the beginning, I was like, well, is she too buttoned up to like play, be slimed in Double Dare? Is that going to be and share stories about our relationships and stuff like that? And I've been pleasantly surprised by how quickly you've embraced being a talk show host. It's
that was for me the probably the hardest part to overcome, but you just have to accept it. Like it's if everyone else is sharing and they're playing and they're being part of it, you have to too. And it ends up being fun because you know your own boundaries. Like don't
No, but it seems like it comes pretty naturally to you, actually.
I think so. You kind of forget the audience is there. That's when it's
right. And the people are watching at home.
Well, not the audience. I remember the studio audience. It's more the like 2 million people watching at home. I forget about it.
And the memes that'll be there for years and years and years afterwards.
Yeah, like I've not given up on like, you know, elected office or something in the future way down the road. And I'm like, there will forever be memes of me being slimed and whatnot.
Yeah,
but hey,
that'll be there. But you know what? Listen, there's memes of everyone is running for office these days. And they're a lot worse than that. You can't go wrong with it. But it's definitely it's a lot of fun. And I think as the news cycle gets more and more serious, the moments for fun and sliming might get harder to find right now. So I'm trying to have fun when we can.
People need it. Things are. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a release and it's good. But we'll see what else we can come up with. I still haven't given up my dreams of having you all on a real game show. So
we should do it. But only if we really prep, because people will be angry if we lose. And by people, I mean the hosts, and you will be angry.
I will be furious. We have to really.
We shouldn't. The thing is, I'm like, you've got legal, you've got politics, you've got history buff, you've got entertainment. Like, you have all the different areas you'd need to pull from.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, freezing up under pressure is a very real thing.
Right. Although you guys have live television every
That's
day.
True.
How hard could it be? We'll figure it out. All right. Well, on that note, thank you for joining me, Alyssa.
Of course.
Tomorrow, I'll be back with Sunny. The number to call or text us with questions is right here in the episode description. Thank you for listening. Please leave us a comment, leave us a rating, and have a great day.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' group text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers Group Text Podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one group text you won't want to exit.